Good evening, everyone. Before I start, I want to thank Mrs. Vexler for printing out. Yeah, give her a little credit. Apart from being a wonderful person in the office that I like to just say hello to, I last minute called her about printing out the entirety of the packet, which we're not going to utilize the entire thing tonight, but I want to thank her for that. It's a pleasure being here tonight. It's a pleasure because I enjoy teaching very much, teaching Torah topics in Judaism. It's a pleasure because I love the people in this community. I'm really from New York, so when you come to the South, you really appreciate not being in New York anymore. You don't appreciate it until you're down here and you have a green light, and when you want to make a left, the people stop in the middle of the road to make a left, and the New Yorker in you just gets angry, even though they're being nice to you. So that's the second reason I'm happy to be here. And the third is I love Ray Freundlich. So he asked me to speak, so I couldn't say no. My name is Binyamin Sloviter. I moved here about a year and a half ago from Baltimore. And my wife and I have been in the community for a year and a half, and we really enjoy it. I do outreach for the Atlanta Scholars Cole and greatly enjoy my job and the people I'm with. But tonight I'm here. So I'm here to speak about, in Hebrew, Tchiyas HaMesim, the resurrection of the dead, which when I helped run the beginner service on Rosh Hashanah, we had a question and answer session, which I was very excited for. Question and answer is like you can't prepare for it. You have no idea what's going to happen. Hopefully you won't be embarrassed too badly in public. And the most common question was trying to explain the concept of the resurrection of the dead. Why was that the most common question on a Rosh Hashanah service? Because we all came together and we all prayed together. And when you're praying, the different prayers are, a lot of them are wonderful. Health, happiness, you know, growth, spiritual growth. And then there's that prayer about the resurrection of the dead, which is just like, what on earth is going on? In my work, usually people feel like it's like their great-grandfather is going to rise from the dead and eat their leg off or something like that. So here we're hopefully going to try to understand a little bit about that principle. The concept of Tchiyas HaMesim is one of the 13 principles of Jewish faith. A Jewish person is obligated to believe that it is true and it is a real concept. What I'd like to do tonight is, first of all, forgive me. I don't usually work in this format, so hopefully I won't go under time. I certainly don't like going over time. I lose friends that way. And I have a few friends in the audience. But what I do want to do is give you the sort of outline of where we're going to be going tonight. I want to read some sources that discuss the idea of why it's a value in Judaism to believe in the resurrection of the dead. What do they actually say about it? I'd like to talk a little bit about the actual sources and reading some of the sources inside that discuss the idea of the resurrection of the dead. I want to talk about the purpose of why it is important. That's probably the most important question, trying to understand why it should be a value. discuss another concept of, is the resurrection of the dead only for the righteous? It's another aspect. How will the resurrection actually occur? How does it happen? Is it spontaneous? Where does it happen? Does it happen in Atlanta, Georgia? I know it's very holy here. It is the Bible Belt, but maybe it's in Israel. Maybe it's out of Israel. And then come back around, and what I'd like to do, like I like to do in Judaism in general, is try to bring back the value, to try to understand how it impacts our life nowadays. So I'd like everybody to turn to what should be page 3, source 2. So we're going to say some things outside, but I'd like to base it on the sources inside and learn it together. This is a quote from Maimonides. It was interesting. The Rambam, Maimonides, did not discuss a lot about Tchiyas HaMesim at a certain point in time. And people had asked him, do you not believe in it? What's going on here? So he wrote a letter explaining, no, I'm a God-fearing Jew. I do believe in it. And I want to talk a little bit about it. So here he quotes and talks about it. He writes the following. The concept of the resurrection of the dead, universally acknowledged by our people, incorporated in our daily prayers, which were composed by prophets and great wise men full of knowledge of the Talmud and Medrash, refers literally to returning of the soul to the body after it has been separated from it, It requires no allegorical explanation. It's very important. There are many, many things mentioned by the sages of the Talmud in the Medrash and in the Gemara. Oftentimes we'll say it's not literal, it's not what it means, it's allegorical. Maimonides says this is not one of those examples. This is something that a Jewish person must believe, and this is something that we should take literally. Okay, we just want to lay the foundation for that concept. The next, I would like to talk about some examples from Tanakh and from the Talmud. So let's turn to page 5. We're going to read a few sources together. Now it's interesting, I'm going to preface this reading that the concept of the resurrection of the dead, as important as it is actually not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. So in the weekly portion that we read, it's not mentioned explicitly like wearing tzitzis or tefillin or Shabbos. Those are important values. Shabbos is not one of the 13 principles of Jewish faith, even though it's very important. It's mentioned in the Torah. The resurrection of the dead is one of the 13. It made it to the 13, yet it's not mentioned. So I'd like to read that. You could ponder that. And then we're going to kind of circle around and try to answer that question. So let's read source 3 together. It's the one source we're going to read that's actually from the five books of Moses, from the Chumash. It says, it's talking about what God does. It says, "See now that I am He, and no God is with me. I put to death, and I bring to life." Okay, so I kill people, and I bring them to life. "I struck down, and I will heal. And there is no rescuer from my hand." Okay, it's God describing His abilities. So Rashi, the Talmud, the Jewish oral tradition, describes what is the ambiguity of this verse? What's it referring to? So it's Psachim 68a. It quotes, "I put to death and I bring life. The Holy One, blessed be He, said, 'Whoever I cause to die, I shall resurrect.'" So the one person, as that person passes away at some time in the future, which we'll discuss later in this lecture, a person will be resurrected. Now again, that's not straight out in the Torah. It's not straight out in the verse. It's explained from the oral tradition, but that is a source. Source 4 is from Yeshayahu, from the prophets, Isaiah. "The dead shall live." It's a little bit more explicit. "Your dead shall live. Corpses shall arise. Awaken and sing, you who dwell in the dust." A little bit more explicit that there will be some resurrection. And source number 5, Daniel. "And many who sleep in the dust of the earth will awaken." Okay, so we hear now, we're adding onto the foundation. We recognize that the resurrection of the dead is a value. We recognize that it is hinted at in the Torah, perhaps. It's stated explicitly in the later prophets. Now, the Talmud in Sanhedrin, in the 10th chapter, it's a very fascinating chapter. It talks about a lot of things in the afterlife. Goes at length, in folios and folios and blätter, to try to understand sources and hints in the actual Torah itself for the concept of the resurrection of the dead. Yet, we don't find it explicitly stated. So I'd like to explain a possible answer. There was a rabbi that lived in Iraq, in Bavel. Was called Babylonia at the time. It's modern-day Iraq. His name was Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon, Gaon means genius, and he was the head of the Talmudic Academy in Iraq about a millennia ago. And he asked the question, why don't we talk about the afterlife? Why don't we talk about the soul directly? Why don't we talk about the next world directly? Why don't we talk about the resurrection of the dead in the Torah itself? There are hints to the concept of a soul, that when man was created, a soul was breathed into him, it was breathed in. However, it's not really discussed as a topic of importance. So Rav Sadia Gaon says, the reason why afterlife and things along those lines are not discussed as much is because in Judaism, the Torah is a Torat Chaim. It's the Torah's Chaim. It's the teachings of our life. Judaism isn't a religion that emphasizes too much what happens after life, because here we're supposed to be in this world, we're supposed to function in this world, we're supposed to enter the world, and we're supposed to utilize Judaism to function properly in the world. We're not supposed to run away from the world. We're not supposed to necessarily live in a cave. We take Judaism and we work in the world with Judaism. And therefore, we don't want to focus too much on the afterlife. Despite that fact, it is a value. As I was learning with a student today, a very interesting thing, the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, he talks about responsibility in this world, and he says, the purpose of why we're here is we're supposed to take the mundane, we're supposed to take what he calls the darkness, and we're supposed to make it the light. We're not supposed to run away from it. Just an interesting value that I found I wanted to share with you. Okay, so just to stop for a second to review what we've done so far. We've quoted Maimonides, one of the greatest of Jewish philosophers. He's saying it's clearly one of the 13 principles of Jewish faith, the idea of the resurrection of the dead. And we've seen some sources in the Torah, and we've seen some sources in the prophets of the concept of the resurrection of the dead. So nobody, we haven't, at this stage, nobody's made it up. Okay, now I would like to discuss together is the purpose of why the resurrection of the dead is actually a value of importance. And it is not like your great-grandfather chewing your leg off, you know, after he woke up and he's grumpy. It's not what happened. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to mention three approaches for you guys and then look at the sources inside. Three fascinating approaches. Number one, the approach of why the resurrection of the dead is a value is because, you know, we live our life, we have a body, we have a soul, the soul is placed in our body, and we have to be held responsible. The Talmud tells us that there's an opinion that we're judged every single day for our behavior. There's an opinion that we're judged on Rosh Hashanah, which is the prevalent opinion. It's the opinion that we all know. On Rosh Hashanah, we come to shul and we pray for success for the next year. There's an opinion that when we go up to heaven, to the world of the soul, so to speak, God asks us different questions. Questions I like to say to guys, not in front of their wives, is that Reb Chaim Vital, one of the greatest students of the Arizal, writes that the question God's going to ask us is, what kind of a husband were you? What kind of a spouse are you? So I usually tell the guys, and I'm like, don't, you know, I don't want to make your life harder. That's a question that they ask. And a fourth concept, which is the opinion of the Ritva, who's one of the early commentaries, is the resurrection of the dead is the Yom HaGadol. It's the great day of judgment. It's the day of judgment where our soul and our body are put back together. Our soul and our body are put back together and we're judged. God says to us, I want your soul to come back in your body. I want to look at you. I want to have a discussion with you about your behavior. And then I want to be able to decide what portion in the world to come you're really going to have. That's one approach. The concept of the resurrection of the dead is an ultimate accounting for my behavior in this world. That's approach number one. I want to tell you another thought. It's less of an independent approach, but just something that kind of touches my heart. It's an approach by the Mabid, who's one of the great rabbis who wrote a philosophical work. And he writes the following. One of the drushas, one of the attempts of the Talmud to expound where the concept of the resurrection of the dead is hinted at in the Torah, talks about the concept of Az Yashir. We say it in the morning in davening, Az Yashir Moshe, that the Jewish people are going to sing. Discusses Az Yashir, then you will sing. So the Talmud says, oh, that's referring to the resurrection of the dead. Really? Where? How is that possibly referring to the resurrection of the dead? So the Mabit explains, "Uz." The Hebrew word "uz" means then. It's referring to then at a very specific time, yashir, which in the future tense in Hebrew means you will sing or he will sing. Says the Mabit a beautiful thing. He says, the Jews of the desert, when they spoke negatively about the land, God said, you don't deserve the land, the holy land of Israel, the land of Jewish inspiration, you don't deserve it. You're not going to be allowed into the land of Israel, and you're going to have to wander in the desert for 40 years, because the Jews aged 20 to 60, who were responsible for their behavior, you cannot go into Israel. And those Jews regretted that. They regretted the mistake they made. They wanted to go into Eretz Israel. They wanted to go to the land of Israel. They pined for it. They were so disappointed. And they couldn't go. And so says the Mabit, that when the Talmud says, Az Yashir, and then you will sing, you Jews of the desert, that you couldn't get into Israel, don't worry. You'll be resurrected. You'll be resurrected and you'll be able to get into Eretz Israel. A very comforting thing. You'll be able to get to the land that you so yearn for, the land to be able to live, to the holy land of Israel. And Yashir, and you'll go and you'll be resurrected and you'll walk there and you'll sing a song of joy. So the resurrection of the dead, not only is it just a day of judgment, some day that I should look as scary and dark, but it's a day of hope. It's a moment of hope that the mistakes that we make can be rectified. That's that specific message. It's a beautiful message I heard from a mentor of mine. The third and final approach, which I think is the most amazing, needs a little bit of a preface. We'll read some of this inside together as a review. But it's the approach of the Ramchal. The Ramchal is an acronym for a famous Italian Kabbalist, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. A famous person, passed away at a young age of 39. According to some Kabbalists, he was the Gilgul. He was the reincarnation of a different rabbi, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was the sage of the Talmud. He started learning Torah at 40 years old. He lived a life of hatred of Torah scholars. He didn't understand them. He was intimidated by them. And at 40, he finally sort of grew, matured beyond that, and he became one of the greatest sages that ever lived. But for those first 40 years, what were those first 40 years? What happened? So the rectification, so to speak, for him, the Kabbalists say, was his soul went in to the body of this man, Reb Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, and he passed away at 39 in Israel of, I believe, the plague, unfortunately. So the Ramchal is one of the greatest Jewish philosophers. He lived in the 18th century in Italy. And he says the following beautiful thing, and this is really just takes the resurrection of the dead, like I always told you, like it's not Resident Evil 4, man-eating zombie, it turns into some beautiful approach. And I'll say the following. Let's go back to a famous story of the Chumash. Adam and Eve are in the garden. They're there, according to many commentaries, they're there to learn Torah and to do mitzvahs, to do good. They had the opportunity to live a life of goodness without struggle of bad and good and evil, right? We all live now, every day of our lives. Sometimes it's a big struggle, sometimes it's a small struggle, sometimes it's a struggle to wake up, sometimes it's a struggle to do the dishes. I don't have that struggle, I always do the dishes happily, of course, but some of us have struggles in life. Adam and Eve, at a certain point, they didn't have those struggles. There was no struggle. Then, as we all know, the story is the snake seduced Eve. Eve then gave the fruit. It's actually, according to Jewish tradition, not an apple. Different four-way debate what the fruit was. But anyways, they eat the fruit, and the reality of the struggle of good and evil begins. They can't live in a perfect world anymore. They're kicked out of the garden, and now we're all stuck with the mistake of Adam. And there's an Adam in the back, I apologize. Anyways, we're stuck with Adam's mistake, and now we have to struggle our lives to choose between good and evil. Okay? We could have had a perfect world. Now we're stuck here in an imperfect world and imperfect bodies, and the goal is to choose good over bad, to purify our soul and purify our body. That's the goal. Now, we can't, you know, it's a hard thing. We need a whole lifetime to do that. And the idea, says the Ramchal, is the following. The idea is that over the course of my life, I choose so much good over bad that I sanctify my soul and I sanctify my body to the utmost degree. That means by the time I die, my body then disintegrates. It's gone. My soul can go up to this next world. And the world will move on. And then the resurrection of the dead is the opportunity for all of us to get back to the world of Adam and Eve before they made the mistake. How? Because our souls, which hopefully will be rectified, will be resurrected in a new body. That body will not be the weak, impure body that we have now. It will be a perfected body that is really deserved of the perfect soul. Okay? The Ramchal makes one more point, which is that the Talmud in Rosh Hashanah in 31a says a very fascinating thing. We're going to have, and I'll say this over later, the era, the Messianic age, this world will end, the Messiah will come, he'll usher in an era of world peace, where we don't enslave other people, it's just the ability for us to sit and learn Torah, to grow in our good deeds and mitzvahs. Excuse me. Then the world will be desolate for 1,000 years, the Talmud says. 1,000 years it'll be desolate. And then there will be the resurrection of the dead. So I was always bothered by this until I read the writings of the Ramchal. What on earth does the world need to be desolate for? But according to the Ramchal, it's very simple. The world's imperfect. So just like we need to be perfected, and we need to be resurrected again, our bodies need to be resurrected, the world needs to be perfected. That world was made impure by the sin of Adam and Eve. And therefore, by the resurrection of the dead, we have our last shot. We have a second chance at a perfect world, living a greater level of spirituality. Okay, so I'm going to review the three things I said in short, and then we're going to see the sources inside. Number one is that the resurrection of the dead is an opportunity for us to have a judgment. Our soul is put back in our body and we're judged, because again, we're not just a body, we're not just a soul, it's both. The second is the opportunity for us to get to Israel, because the resurrection of the dead will be in Israel, as we'll see. And the third is the Ramchal's opinion that it's an opportunity for a second chance. Very positive message. So I'd like for everybody to turn to... it's a good question. I didn't write what page number. Page 6. Source 2. I'm going to read together here. This is by the Ramchal in Derech Hashem. Great book, I recommend it if you haven't read it already. The Way of God. He writes the following. After Adam's mistake, justice decreed that neither man nor the world will ever be able to rise to perfection while still in their current fallen state. Because they remain in this spoiled, non-ideal condition, and evil in the meantime has increased, both man and the world must go through a stage of destruction before either can arrive at perfection. As I said, the world has to be transformed, recycled anew. Man must therefore die, and everything else that was corrupted with him also must perish. The soul cannot purify the body until the body dies and deteriorates, and a new structure is composed that the soul can enter and purify. It was therefore decreed that man should die and then be brought back to life. This is the concept known as the resurrection of the dead. So it's a second chance, a second opportunity for us in our daily lives to work towards fixing the sin of Adam and Eve. I don't know if I've ever thought about it like that. You know, when I have a struggle between good and bad, even something small, do I look at it like, hey, I can fix the mistake of Adam and Eve, you know, in the course of my whole life? That's what the Ramchal is insinuating. The true time and place of reward will therefore be after the resurrection in this renewed world. Man will then enjoy his reward with both body and soul. The body will be purified by the soul and will therefore also be in a proper state to enjoy that good. Okay, that's the Ramchal's approach. I'd like to go, I didn't quote this Gemara outside to you. It's a fascinating Gemara, to the bottom of page 7, source 1. This really is indicative of the opinion of the Ritva that it's a day of judgment. It's a fascinating piece of Gemara. The Talmud says the following. There's Antoninus Reb Yehuda Nasi, Judah the Prince. Antoninus was the head Roman personality at the time, and Judah the Prince was the head Jewish personality, and they were very close. They were very close friends. They represented two different worlds, but they were able to bridge those differences with a common respect. Antoninus said to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the body and the soul can both free themselves from judgment. Thus the body can plead, the soul has sinned. It's not my fault. I don't take responsibility. It's the soul's fault. The proof being that from the day it left me, I lie like a dumb stone in the grave, powerless to do anything, right? The body is dead in the grave when the soul flew up out of the body. So the body's going to say, I didn't do anything wrong because it was the soul that was pressuring me, so to speak. While the soul can say, the body has sinned. It's not my fault, it's the body's fault. The proof being that from the day I departed from it, I fly about in the air like a bird, and I commit no sin. So Antoninus, fascinating, a Roman philosopher, is teaching Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, so to speak, you need the body and the soul to come together at the judgment, because each one won't take responsibility. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi replied, I'll tell you a parable to explain this. To what may this be compared? To a human king who owned a beautiful orchard, which contains splendid figs. He appointed two watchmen for the orchard, one lame and the other blind, right? If you appoint two watchmen that can't possibly steal properly, it's a good idea. One day, the lame man said to the blind man, I see beautiful figs in the orchard. Come and take me upon your shoulder that we may take and eat them. So the lame man rode on top of the blind man and took and ate them. So obviously the parable's for the soul and the body. So let's come together and eat the figs. Sometime later, the owner of the orchard came and asked them, where are those beautiful figs? You know, who stole my food? The lame man replied, have I then feet to walk with? It couldn't be me. The blind man replied, have I then eyes to see with? What did he do? He placed the lame man upon the blind man and judged them together. Right? He put them together. He says, I'm not fooled by you. So will the Holy One, blessed be He, bring the soul, replace it in the body, and judge them together. He'll take my soul, and He'll put it in my body, and He'll say, okay, let's take a closer look at you, Binyamin. This is referred to in the verse, He will call to the heavens above and to the earth to judge His people. He will call to the heavens above refers to the soul, and to the earth that He may judge His people refers to the body. So we see clearly in the Talmud, the resurrection of the dead is also a very fascinating, fantastic way of, I don't know if it's on purpose to embarrass me, but probably if you're like me, we'll be a little embarrassed, okay? Is not only that we can have an opportunity to perfect the world like the Ramchal writes, but it's an opportunity for us to make an accounting. Okay, beautiful. So that is the end of the idea of the purpose of the resurrection. So now, the question is, when we get to the resurrection of the dead, who is going to be resurrected? Is everybody going to be resurrected? Are only righteous people resurrected or non-righteous people? I mean, it depends. What's righteous? Maimonides says a righteous person is somebody that does 51% mitzvahs, 51% good deeds. Okay, that makes me feel better. You smiling? Anybody else smiling at that? Yes? Everybody's happy. Okay. So 51%. That's what a righteous person is. So we'll have to see who is resurrected exactly. So let's go to page 9, source 1 at the bottom. It's a responsa from one of the most famous Jewish legal authorities of all time. His name was the Radvaz. He lived in Egypt at the time. Now, what he's going to say, to make this more clear, is that there are two stages of the resurrection. Very righteous people that don't really need a judgment because God understands that they were righteous, which is probably 0.001%, I hope. I mean, not I hope, but I assume. Those people won't really need the regular resurrection that most people will need. There are going to be two stages. So he writes in his responsa, "You, my dear friend, asked me about the time of the resurrection. For you claim to have received a tradition from your forefathers that it will take place close to the time of the seventh millennia, along with the Shabbat of the world, which means when the world rests and remains desolate, which will be a time of complete rest. Secondly, you were bothered by the possibility that the great righteous people who died for the sake of God's name during the period of exile would not see the good fortune of Israel and will not be able to rejoice in their joy." Right? Many Jews in the time of the Crusades, they literally gave up their lives so as not to renounce their Jewish beliefs. It's an unbelievable thing that's so hard to understand when I, you know, in my pampered lifestyle. But these people, their Judaism was so part of who they were that they couldn't understand their existence in life without a constant reminder of their Jewish identity. So the person was concerned, what's going to be with those people? So he says, don't worry. The answer, all my life I was bothered by this question. Okay, the Radvaz was one of the great rabbis. His whole life he didn't know the answer. Until I saw the words of the Ritva, which I quoted to you earlier, in the name of his teachers, that there will be two resurrections. The first will be a private one for the righteous that died during the period of exile. Those that really gave up their whole life for what they believed, those people that their beliefs were so important to them, nothing else paled in comparison, those people will be resurrected first. They will merit to experience the good fortune of Israel in both body and spirit, as well as to see the building of the temple. And they will rejoice in joy. And the second, more general resurrection will be close to the time of the Shabbat of the world, just as you and I have received the tradition. That is what is referred to as the world of the resurrection. And upon it was said, many of those who sleep in the dust shall awaken, the verse I quoted to you before. In case it's unclear, I'm going to just tell you the timeline of what he's talking about. Okay? So we live in Olam Hazeh, this world, okay? Atlanta, Georgia, 2015. At a certain point, the Messiah is going to come. He's going to usher in an era of world peace. There will be some sort of war, according to Jewish tradition. It's not to enslave other nations. It's just so the Jews can be free to connect to our Creator, connect to our Jewish heritage. Then, after a certain period of time, the world will be, as we said, desolate to perfect the world, and then we're going to have the resurrection of the dead. So, at the Messianic time, those righteous, righteous people that so yearned for the temple, that so yearned for Israel, those people will be resurrected right away. Most people will be resurrected after, much later. Okay? Anybody have any questions, clarifications?
Jewish people or old people?
That's a fantastic question. Rav Sadia Gaon, who I've quoted to you before, again, he was a rabbi about 1,000 years ago, lived in Iraq. He does say that the resurrection of the dead is for Jewish people and not for non-Jewish people. He's not very clear on his reasoning. I think I have an understanding of it. It's really my interpretation. Because the resurrection of the dead isn't some reward that by non-Jews not being resurrected, it's a punishment. It's simply that Adam and Eve had a certain goal. They had a certain way to perfect the world in a certain way, which became the Jewish goal, the goal that is not required of non-Jewish people. We're one of the few religions that don't require everyone to be like us. There's I don't want to call it a club, but there's a group. There's a group that demand moral excellence. That's the Jewish people. And to be part of the Jewish people, anybody can be part of it, but it requires a certain moral excellence. That was what was supposed to be demanded of Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve failed. And we don't require that level of moral integrity of everyone. Those people that want to rectify the mistake of an Adam and Eve, those Jewish people, those people, when they do it, they will be resurrected, so to speak. So it's my interpretation, my possible answer of Rav Sadia Gaon's words, and perhaps there's a dissenting opinion that I couldn't find. I'm not sure. Great question. I prepared it and was going to omit it. Okay. Any other questions? By the way, I come from a family of people with big mouths, and we love to talk. So again, if I'm unclear, it's my fault. Go ahead. Is everyone going to be the same?
Yeah, everybody look the same. Everybody be the same. The souls all be the same.
No, everybody's going to be individualized, and people will look as is. You know, are we at a you know prime age of 55, 60, you know 35? What age are we going to be? That's a good question, but that's unclear to me at this stage. But we'll be individualized. No, it's not going to be any carbon copies.
I put to death and I bring life. The Holy One blessed be He's dead. Then it says, whoever I cause to die, I shall resurrect. I think this is a really interesting way of being phrased, and I would like to see if we can embellish upon that and see what this actually means. Why is it stating, whoever I cause to die, I shall resurrect?
So could you elaborate a little bit on the question? In other words, what part of that verse?
Yes. So where it says, I put to death and I bring life. The Holy One, blessed be He, said. And then it's quoted again. Whoever I cause to die, I'll resurrect.
Thank you very much.
So who else is it? He's saying that he puts to death and he brings life. So it sounds a little bit ambiguous or something here. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, okay. So you're doing...
There's something else being said here than what is just like...
Okay, I think I'm understanding the nuance of the question. If I'm going to try to beef up the question, okay? This would, in a Talmudic analysis, would say, you know, by leaving it ambiguous, you're leaving room for me to expound something from it. Okay? So whoever I put to death, those people I'm going to bring to life. So it is ambiguous. I'm not sure. The Talmud does say here is a proof for the resurrection of the dead. Okay, or it's an ambiguity that we're recognizing is for the resurrection of the dead. But beyond that, I'm not sure. I would have thought it as a question on Rav Sadia Gaon. I would have said it implies in the verse that anybody that dies, Jewish people or non-Jewish people, right? I don't know if that's the question you're asking, but that would be a terrific question to ask on Rav Sadia Gaon. I'll try to call him later tonight after the class. Yeah.
If the soul is sent back for reprocessing, movement, and then gets put into another body, how do you match the soul and the body? And is it geotagged or otherwise? How do we know? How does the soul, what body does the soul go back to if the soul has gone from a different body?
So I think actually one of the sources, which we're not reading together, actually does discuss it. So that's Mrs. Vexler's genius of printing out the whole packet. You can see, but I think it's the most righteous tag team. I think that's what this source says, but I don't remember offhand. What does that mean? Sorry, yeah. It means when you in whichever body you were in that your soul was in, that where you were successful to purify your soul in that lifetime, that body and that soul will be resurrected together.
So if you don't look, people don't look the same as you came back.
Yeah, you're gonna come back as you are. No, I think the body will look as the body does. It the body. So let's say that's the greatest life cycle you did. So then that body with that soul will be resurrected.
Right, and nobody will recognize me.
That's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question. There are Kabbalists, the mystics, say that if a person didn't purify their soul in one life, then the soul will come into another body, right? So I had that question as I was learning, preparing for the class. Hey, you know, which body, how do we know? And it's probably geotagged, because I think God is tech savvy, is not from the older generation, whatever. It's a story. Yeah, anyways. Yeah, I'm sorry if people are raising their hands in order and it's hard for me to tell. Yeah.
Okay. So this is something you said right at the beginning. So, Rabbi Akiva didn't really learn anything until he was 40, right? He was an Amma Aretz, he was 40. And Rabbi Lutsato, who's a great scholar who died at 39. Who was reincarnated, or did they share a body?
It could, I think it was a different body. You know, again, you know, I do try to moonlight as a Kabbalist at, you know, for a small fee, whatever. It's a separate thing. But I think that it was a different body. I think, you know, Rabbi Kiva's body and Rav Moshe Chaim Lutsato's body were different. But again, it's just conjecture. But if I say it confidently, it's probably, you know, I'll probably sell. Yeah.
So do you have to be in Eretz Yisrael?
Okay, terrific question. We're going to discuss that. Okay. Any other questions? Sorry, yeah.
Some people say that souls are split and that's how you find your soulmate, is finding the other half of your soul. But you're talking as if the soul is whole in each person. So is it that soulmates are that the other person has half or essence of your soul, or I'm confused on that.
So are we, just to clarify, is this a Bashert question, of like soulmate question? How does that work?
Yeah, because you're saying the souls are united with the body, but the soul don't make half of the soul.
Yeah, I don't know. Right, good question. Right. How many times is the soul split? Maybe we should ask J.K. Rowling. I'm not sure. I've never seen anything like that, that the soul is literally split. And when you marry your Basharet, as we say, Basharet is this concept I think we all romantically want to attribute to. I'm not sure if it works like that. I don't know if it works like that. My wife feels that way when I do the dishes. She feels like I'm her Basharet, but I'm not sure if that's really because our souls are split.
The second yeah. When the bones were brought back to life, they didn't really have bodies to be known. They were just bones being brought back to life. But the time when we painted and died during the reading of the first two, the Ten Commandments, it was our whole body. So do we know if it's going to be like the bones or like a...
There is a source that discusses that in the packet that talks about from the Talmud to Beis Shammai Beis Hillel how the body is resurrected. You know, is it the skin first? And, you know, I don't know if hopefully everybody's eaten already, but, you know, is it the skin first and then the bones? Is it the bones out? Okay, that's a point of academic debate. It's a good question, though. So you'll find the source inside, yeah. That's it? That's all you got? That's it? Just kidding. Hey, I remember you from the beginner service. Hey. Long time no see.
I have a question, but I just wanted to make a quick comment. Is that I read that the world to come is not only for the Jews, it's for the Gentiles who are righteous that follow the law and are lost, don't get the much of so forth. But the question is, after the resurrection, I mean, if we're bearing Hebrew, if we're bearing this sign of the land of Israel, we're going to be moved to Israel and the ground, and I'm wondering how everyone's going to fit in such a small place.
Right, right. Well, in Israel, we're building up. So hopefully everybody's going to have an apartment. Don't worry. If you don't have a spot, you could stay with me. It's fine. Okay. So let's use that as a good segue to continue. But it's a fantastic question. We're going to discuss it. So what I want to talk about now is how the actual body is resurrected, because I found a phenomenal understanding. You know, I had for years, I knew two of the sources I'm going to quote to you. And last night, I found a new source that was just, to me, was mind-blowing. The Medrash, which is a statement of philosophical implication from the sages of the Talmud, says the following thing: that the body is going to be resurrected from the luz, the bone at the bottom of the spine. So the body disintegrates, and when the body is resurrected, it's going to be resurrected from the bottom of the spine out. Okay, we're going to see the source inside. Okay. So the Tur, who's one of the Jewish halachic authorities, actually writes that the bottom of the spine is strengthened, it is nurtured, it is fed by the food that we eat on Saturday night, which is called the... Malava Malka. Okay, the Malava Malka, which is the customarily, after Shabbos is over, we have three meals on Shabbos, Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon. Sometimes during the winter, it's like literally 10 minutes. I feel like it's 10 minutes after the meal I just ate. It's just terrible sometimes. Anyways, but the meal right after Shabbos is called the Malava Malka, where we escort the queen, the Shabbos queen, away. So the Torah says that that little bit of the spinal cord that the resurrection comes from is actually strengthened from when somebody is very careful to eat the Malava Malka. Okay? Now, I saw an amazing understanding by an ethicist who lived in who passed away in the 20th century. Okay, his name was Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler. He lived in England, and he moved to Israel, and he was a fantastic thinker, a Jewish thinker, and his writings are just unbelievable. It's translated into English. He writes the following thing. He says, the Medrash isn't literal. It doesn't mean literally the bottom of the spine is where the body is going to be resurrected from. Because we see that some bodies are completely destroyed. There is no bottom of the spine. You're going to tell me that that guy, you know, he just is bad luck. He's not going to be resurrected. It's not what it means. What the Medrash means is the following, is that in life, everybody has a little spark in them. It's a spark of honesty. It's a spark of integrity. It's a spark of truth. The truth that the Jewish patriarchs instilled in us that inspires us as generations go, as Jews return to our faith, we're inspired. And the inspiration comes from this spark. It's a spark of integrity, Rav Dessler says. That spark allows even terrible people that have done terrible things to return and to change their ways. That is really what the message is that it's the resurrection will come, a person's personal resurrection will come from that spark of integrity where somebody says, you know, I've lived a life where I've made mistakes, but instead of pretending like all my mistakes was somebody else's fault or, you know, I had a bad day that day and I'm not going to learn my lesson, I turn around, I face the mistake, I say, I'm not human, I made a mistake, I'm going to grow from it. That's what Rav Dessler says. I think it's just a beautiful, beautiful interpretation. A last point, and then we're going to read a source inside, is Rav Sadi Gon, who I've quoted to you before. He writes that it doesn't matter how the body is destroyed, the body can be resurrected. And it's very simple, he says, because, you know, let's say a person, you know, an animal is consumed, a fish is consumed by a bear, and a bear is killed by a person, and a person eats the bear, and then the person destroys, right? Organic matter might change and transform, but it never fully disappears. That's Rav Sadi Gon, sort of quoting, I believe, a Greek scientific concept, mentions. What I want to do is go, let's turn to page 11, source 2. We'll just read the Medrash together that talks about the bottom of the spinal cord. I don't want to keep you over time. Like I said, I like to keep my friends, not lose them. And then we can sort of ask a few more questions towards the end. Page 11, source 2. It's the Medrash. Hadrian, may his bones rot. Hadrian was the Roman general and then emperor. Once asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania, you see from here a fascinating thing is the rabbis of the Talmud spoke with Roman dignitaries. They were the leaders of the Jewish communities, and the Roman dignitaries asked them questions. You know, what do you guys think about this? Fascinating way of looking at it. From what part of the body will the Holy One, blessed be He, cause man to blossom forth in the future? From the luz, the quote-unquote nut of the spinal column, he replied. How do you know that? He asked. Bring me one and I will prove it to you, he replied. He ground it in a grinder, but it did not get ground. He threw it in the fire, yet it was not burned. He put it in water, but it did not dissolve. He placed it on an anvil and hit it with a hammer, but the anvil split and the hammer broke. Yet the nut was not damaged at all. Right? This is a little bit of a question of Dessler, because he says, you know, can't be literal because we see sometimes the body is destroyed, right? But okay, I didn't say it, he said it. You can ask him. Okay. Now, speaking about the resurrection of the dead from Israel, page 13, source 1, discusses the idea that bodies will only rise in Israel itself. So we have an old custom that when somebody passes away, not all Jews certainly, but many Jews that are very careful will try to be buried in Israel, because they want to make it that the resurrection, when they're resurrected, they don't have a long travel. You know, sometimes the LL flights, the seats are too close together, you don't really appreciate it, whatever, it depends on the person you're next to. Anyways, but the idea is that they want to be really close. So says the Zohar, one of the greatest works of Kabbalistic literature, page 13, source 1. Observe that it has been laid down that the dead of the land of Israel will be the first to rise. and of them it is written, your dead will come to life. On the other hand, the words, my dead body shall arise, allude to the dead of other lands. Since instead of saying shall come to life, it says shall arise. The living spirit, in fact, will only infuse the bodies in the land of Israel. But the bodies buried in other lands will rise without the spirit of life. And only after they have rolled underground and reached the land of Israel will they receive souls and be truly resurrected. Only there, but not in other lands. This refers to a Talmudic concept that those of us buried outside of Israel will do this painful rolling process to get to Israel, and then we will be resurrected. And that has led to this famous Jewish custom, where they're buried in Israel. Jacob, when he's talking to his sons, he says, please don't bury me in the land of Israel. Please don't bury me in the land of Egypt, excuse me. And Rashi quotes from the sages of the Talmud, because he says, I don't want to have to roll. I don't want to have to, God forbid, roll to all the way to Israel. It's going to be very painful. So please bury me in Israel. Okay, so I want to talk about one last part of the resurrection of the dead. That's going to be what the actual world will look like then. When we think about it, do we try to picture it like it is now? And then I want to bring a message home. I want to say a story, something that we can take for our lives now while we're alive, before we are resurrected. So let's go, to page 15. We'll just read source 1 because it's getting a little late. We'll read the words of the Holy Ramchal, and then I'll say the piece of Talmud and a story. The Ramchal describes what the world will look like then when we're resurrected. Since the period of earning and that of reward are different, meaning the period of earning is in this world, and the reward is not seen so often in this world, right? When we do the right thing, we're not always the good guy in the eyes of so many people, and so the reward is for later. And the era of reward is the next world. Since the period of earning and that of reward are different, it is appropriate that man's environment and experiences be different in the two, which means the next world and the resurrection of the dead, the world's going to look different. While he is striving towards perfection, he must be in a setting containing elements necessary for such effort. In this world, the world's got to be difficult, struggle, challenge, right? I always feel like, when one challenge I have is over, another one begins. It's like it's never let up. The idea is in this world, we're supposed to go through challenges. It's not supposed to be easy. The period of earning must therefore be one where a maximum challenge exists and where the spiritual and physical are in constant strife. In this environment, there must be nothing to prevent the material from prevailing and doing what it can. And conversely, there must be nothing to prevent the spiritual from doing likewise. Nothing should exist that would give either one an inappropriate advantage. This world has to have a struggle between good and bad, and it can't be too much on the side of bad or too much on the side of good. It would make the existence too difficult either way, or too easy for that matter. Although it might seem best to make the spiritual stronger than the physical, in the light of man's true purpose and what God desires of him, namely that he earn perfection through his own effort, it would not be good at all, right? Oftentimes people ask me, if God would just show up and tell me he's there, so then I would believe in him, right? Then I would believe in him. Just call me. Don't even call me, just text me, whatever. Just say you're there, whatever it is. And the idea is that would be unfair. It would take away my free will. It wouldn't enable me to succeed through the challenge. Therefore, he can't show himself. He showed himself in Egypt when he created the nation of the Jewish people, and then he lets us choose from there. In the period of reward, however, the second paragraph, the exact opposite is appropriate. The more the physical would prevail, the more it would darken the soul and prevent it from being drawn close to God. So in the next world, it's going to be much more spiritual because the challenge is over. We've made it. During the time of reward, it is therefore appropriate that the soul prevail and that the physical be totally subjugated to it and not restrain it at all. And that is why God created two worlds, this world and the next. This world is the place that runs according to the laws of nature, conducive to man's effort. Right? The world works in certain ways. You could predict certain things happening, struggles, trials, and tribulations, while the world to come functions according to the laws of nature that are fitting for receiving reward. The next world will be a different world. The body we'll have will be a more spiritual body with our soul. The world will be a more spiritual world. We will benefit from God directly, from his spirituality. That's what will happen in the world to come. Yeah?
Is it clear that you'll be able to recognize anybody else in the world to come? For example, would you be able to see your mother and father?
Yeah. Yeah. You will. That's a good segue for the story that I'm going to say. But before that story, I'm going to say a statement of the Gemara. Before that, I'm just going to review the points that we said, and then we're going to sort of conclude. So again, we spoke about, in conclusion, the resurrection of the dead. Maimonides saying it's not allegorical. It is one of the 13 principles of Jewish faith. We've seen it sourced in the Tanakh, in the Torah, in the Talmud. It's a very important thing. The purpose of the resurrection is either both facets. It's a day of judgment, a final judgment. It's a day where we have the opportunity to finally live in the perfect world that God had conceived for Adam and Eve. The ultimate righteous will be resurrected first, and then most people will be resurrected at the end. Will be resurrected, so to speak, from the bone of the spine, which is really, as Rav Dessler says, is sort of that spark of integrity that we have to grow. It's only going to be in Israel, and so those of us that live outside are going to roll underneath, and it's going to be a much more spiritual world. I want to tell you a story in the Gemara. The Gemara, like we said before, had a story of Rebbe and Antoninus. They were old friends. And Rebbe and Antoninus would spend time with each other, but they would spend time with each other. They didn't want anybody to know, because how would it look, you know? The head of the Jewish community, so at odds with Roman ideals and Roman philosophies, was close with the head of the Roman Empire. So Rebbe Yehuda Anasi and Antoninus would meet in secret. There was a special tunnel that Antoninus would travel in to see Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, and he would bring guards with him. But those guards, every time that he would come, he would kill those guards. So the Roman emperor would bring the guard and he would kill them because he didn't want them telling anybody who he was meeting with, where it was, where the tunnel was. That's what the Talmud says. One time, Rebbe sent one of his students out to the tunnel and the student revived the dead soldier from the dead. Okay? Now the soldier is alive. That's what the Talmud says. And Antoninus turns after his meeting with Rebbe, says, pleasure being with you, old friend, turns to go, and he sees this soldier there alive. So he's shocked, and he turns to Rebbe, and he says, in Aramaic, the Talmud's language is, Zuti de ispuchu, even the smallest rabbis among you, they can be mechaya mesim, they can bring the dead back to life. Even the smallest rabbis amongst you. So this piece of Talmud has many problems, superficially if we analyze it, right? Because the implication of the Talmud is that, you know, the Zutish Yisbehu, the smallest amongst you, the smallest amongst you Jews, you know, the smallest amongst you Jews can revive the dead. So I don't know about you. Again, I don't know what you moonlight as, but I don't know how to revive the dead, right? I don't. So what does the Gemara mean? Does the Gemara mean only the rabbis, like the smallest of the rabbis? But that's not so clear. You know, the Talmud doesn't give many examples of rabbis doing it. It does give some other examples. But it's not so clear in the Talmud what it means. So I saw a beautiful, beautiful interpretation. Beautiful interpretation. The idea is the following. The Arizal, one of the greatest Kabbalists in Jewish history, writes that every single Jew has a neshama elyona, an upper soul, so to speak, and neshama tachtona. Okay, so how does that help us? That's not much clearer anyways. So I saw some commentaries that explain the following, and they explain it on this Gemara, is that in life, we have different desires, we have different drives, we have different emotions, we have different things that inspire us. Okay? Drive, says these commentaries, that's what motivates us to do things, the excitement to do things. When this soldier, so to speak, died, says the Maharal, one of the greatest Jewish philosophers of all time, who's the chief rabbi of Prague, he writes the following in this Gemara. He didn't literally kill him. Is that Antoninus, so to speak, took away the drive of this man. And the man, well, you know, he didn't have the energy to tell anybody, he wasn't inspired, whatever that means. And what this rabbi did was he had picked him up, so to speak, and he had sort of given him a pep talk, and he had woken him up. He had inspired that neshama elyona, that upper spirit, which really refers to the drive that we have. You know, sometimes you see someone, and you feel like they're alive, right? They got like a hop to them. They have a skip. They have an excitement. They have an energy. And at the same time, you see somebody who looks sad and depressed, like they're not energized. Says the Maharal, he's not saying they literally energized him from the dead. It means the guy was like he was dead. He was not energized. And this rabbi had the ability to pick him up, to say a nice thing, to say a nice comment that gave him a pickup. In life, in general, we have people that are like they're alive and like they're dead, right? People that go through a hard time. We have the ability to say sometimes a comment that picks them up. It's Machaya Mason. It brings people back. I want to tell you a story, and then we'll end here. It's a fascinating story that has something to do with Machaya Mason and reviving the dead. It's a story of the Munkacher Rebbe. Munkacher Rebbe was a Hasidic leader. He's living now. And there's a story about a woman who lived in the town Munkacher in Europe. It's a woman who lived through World War II. And this woman lost her family. She lost her family, and to this day she lives in a town outside of Munkacs. And the Munkacher Rebbe, this Hasidic leader, does not live in Munkacs in Europe anymore. He was visiting. He was visiting to dedicate a museum there to his family's history. So the social worker who worked with this woman to keep her company, she was all alone, said, "Would you like to see the Munkacher Rebbe? Do you know the Munkacher Rebbe?" She said, "You know, my grandfather used to talk about him. My grandfather used to say he was the smartest man ever." So she said, "I'm too old. I can't make it into Munkacs. It's too far. But what I'd like is, could you go to talk to the Rebbe? You talk to the Rebbe. And you ask him two questions for me." So she told her the two questions. The social worker said, "Okay, I'll go. I'll go to the Munkacher Rebbe." So she went to the Munkacher Rebbe and she said, "You know, there's a woman here, she's a survivor, and she told me to tell you her story, and to ask you two questions." He said, "Okay." So her story was the following. She went through World War II, she was married, and she had a young daughter. And the Nazis came in, and they took away everything in their path. They took away her husband, and they took away her daughter. She was kicked out of her home. She survived the war and she came back home because she didn't have nowhere else to go. She came back to her home and she opened the door. She knocked on the door and opened the door. And the non-Jews of the town were in her home, which so often happened. They saw her, they recognized her, and they said, "If you come back here, we're going to kill you. It's not your home anymore." So she didn't know what to do. So she wandered around and wandered in the alleyway behind the home. She looked into the garbage heap and she found two things. She found a doll of her little daughter that she lost. She took that. And she took the Tehillim, her mother's Tehillim that her mother gave her, the Psalms that her mother would pray from. And she took that. She didn't know how to daven, she didn't know how to pray. But she took those two things. She took the doll and she took the Tehillim. So the social worker turned to the Rebbe and she says, "This woman moved on, and she remarried after the war. But her husband, he'd gone through too much. It was too much for him. And after being married for a short while, he also passed on. And she's a tzibrachana woman. She's a broken woman. So she told me to ask you these two questions." She said that she heard there's a concept called tchias amesim. There's a concept called the resurrection of the dead. "And Rebbe, I want to know, when my daughter is resurrected, will she be resurrected at the age that she passed away? Will she be resurrected at that age? Or will she be resurrected older? Not the daughter that I knew." So the Rebbe said, "You know, my father was a smart man. My grandfather was a smart man, but I don't know the answer. But why don't you ask me the second question too?" So the social worker said, "Okay." She said, "This woman doesn't really know how to daven. She has her Tehillim and she has this book and she just takes her finger and she puts it over the words. She just moves it over the words because she's trying to do the best that she can. And she's, her friends make fun of her. Her friends say, that's not davening. That, you don't even know what you're saying. So she said, Rebbe, tell me, is that davening? Is that praying? So the Rebbe took out a piece of paper and a pen, and he wrote a bunch of words on it, handed it to the woman, and the woman saw they were Hebrew names. So the Rebbe said, I don't know the answer to the first question, but the second question, is that davening? I think that's davening. That is praying. And these are the names, the Hebrew names of my family. And I want you to daven for me. And she came home and she told the woman, and the woman was uplifted. He gave her something to latch onto. I think we all, in our way, have, as we said, those struggles up and down, but we really have the ability to sort of replicate the Mechaya Mesim. We can pick up the dead sometimes and give them new life. Thank you.